Hi there, and welcome to episode 29 of the ADHD Adults. I'm James Brown, the poor sap who has to corral one of the biggest idiots in existence through the process that is shambolic podcasting, a man with a head exactly the same shape as Charlie Brown, Dr. Alice Connor. Alice, hi.
In the words, James, of your favourite band, Coldplay, yellow!
I mean, that the most insulting thing about that is obviously saying that I fucking like Coldplay. They're edgeless, banal, yeah, whatever.
I mean, so's Derek Bowie, to be fair.
Oh, just let everybody know that's listening to this, I've actually spent the day with Alex, and therefore my tolerance for him, which is normally low, I suppose is the way to phrase it, is just missing, absent, completely gone. And if I get through this without smashing something, we've made a good start. So, he says with fear and trepidation, how are you, Alex?
I'm very well, thank you, James. Yeah, loving life. Spent the whole day with my good friend James. And we are, as a podcast, in the fantastic position of being about the 3,500th most popular podcast on the internet.
That is brilliantly shit, as claims go, isn't it, to be fair?
I can't decide if it's awesome or ridiculous. Brilliant.
It is ridiculous, I think. But yeah, I'm carry on.
One of those, James, I've been sent a letter from a listener.
Oh, it's no.
Robert from Kidderminster's written in.
No.
Yeah, seriously, I've been sent a letter from Robert from Kidderminster. Hi, Robert. It says, James isn't even the 3,500th most popular person in our house. A bit harsh. I have been sent a real letter from a listener called Hutch. He said we can say his name, and I'm not sure it's any better than Robert's. I can't decide if he's good, can we, James? But we loved it. It said, "Morning. How many of your 26 listeners have to listen to you both talking bollocks on the podcast numerous times before it sinks in like I have to?" Happy for you to use my name, by the way. I've listened to the whole series, both on YouTube and podcast, about six times from start to the current issue. Cheers. Hutch, we love that. I love it.
We do.
Is it good?
It is good. I mean, I'm fair play to you because I can't even listen to this podcast and definitely can't watch it. So to do both is supreme effort, Hutch. Well done, mate.
On YouTube, I have to just hold a piece of paper up covering your face. I just watch myself.
For anybody that's watching on YouTube, you'll notice that Alex has a picture of Philip Schofield behind him. And this is, again, deliberately to wind me up because we did some filming today and I was compared to him, and Alex's face just turned into this big smile as that was said. So he's just
absolute
trying to
gift.
Wind me up. A gift.
It almost made me as happy as the 97 different countries that I've got right. At least one person who listens to us. And
sorry,
one of them...
I've got at least one person that listens to us.
We've got at least one person that listens to us from 97 different countries. And one of them is Germany. So, willkommen. Es freut mich sehr that you're here, James.
I wasn't listening. Luckily, I was open.
You're very well. If you do listen from a far from place or Birmingham, get in touch. We'll read out where you're from. We really like it. And we're, as always, genuinely surprised and delighted.
I mean, yeah, I'm still amazed that anybody outside of our two respective families listens to this complete dog shit of a podcast. As yep. usual, this chocolate teapot of a podcast is a tragedy in three parts. We choose a theme in the last episode, which was the first part of this mini two-part Back to Basics series. We talked about inattentiveness, which is half of the, if you like, diagnostic symptoms of ADHD. This being part two, we're going to cover the other half, which is hyperactivity and impulsivity or impulsiveness. Those three parts. What are you laughing for?
Impulsiveness.
Yes.
I don't know if it's a word. It might be. Who it?
Yes,
might it be.
Well, it's not. Oh, fuck. You can see. I fucking hate you.
It's been too much for you today, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a long day.
Loving it.
The three parts include Pig Face, the psychoeducation monkey. There, talking at the start about some of the science behind hyperactivity and impulsivity. Our personal reflections on how massively hyperactive and impulsive we both are, and some top tips about how you might try and deal with those issues. So, as usual, I'll now pass you over to the man with the face like a giant button, Alex, the psychoeducation monkey, to talk about hyperactivity and impulsivity. Fire away, pig face.
Okay, thank you, I guess. Right, so in part one, we talked about the 9 diagnostic symptoms of so-called inattentiveness. My brother texted me to say he couldn't listen to all 9, which I loved. I've had to check our laughably badly written script bullet points. So James hasn't added another one in about my head. So we have 9, I'm afraid, symptoms of hyperactivity and impulsivity, which, diagnostically speaking, you need to have 5 of. If you're an adult that wants to get a diagnosis, you need 5 of these. Are you ready? So one of them, number 1, you fidget or tap your hands or feet or squirm all the time. You fidgety. B, you leave your seat in situations when remaining
every
seated.
Every fucking time that gets me.
So leaving your seat in situations where remaining seated is the thing you're supposed to be doing. That's what's expected. Twa, experiencing feelings of restlessness. 4, difficulty engaging in quiet and leisurely activities. 5, you are on the go or act as if you're driven by a motor somehow. 6, you talk excessively. 7, you blurt out answers. 8, difficulty waiting your turn, particularly or not, often in conversation. Hmm. And 9, you've got a head like an orange on a toothpick. James, thank you. Right, the real number. Number 9 is you interrupt or intrude on others, ironically.
Well done, Alex, for reading a list. I mean, for you, that's like a big win, isn't it?
Well, my reading age isn't 12, James, like yours, so that's fine, isn't it?
To be fair, mate, it was 12 the last time they checked, so it may be higher now.
Well, in a week, it's not going to raise much. Anyway, to put it basically, it's our brains, James. ADHD brains.
And to not put it basically, to add some information that's useful, maybe?
Okay, so for people cleverer than James, which is everyone... Studies have shown that ADHD brains have smaller and less functional prefrontal cortexes, PFCs, it says here. James wrote that, but you can tell because he didn't write cortices, the plural of cortex. His Latin is shocking. Less functional prefrontal cortices, especially in the right half of the brain. So put your hand on your forehead like you're taking temperature. This area is just behind your forehead and more on the right-hand side. This prefrontal cortex plays a crucial role in regulating what we pay attention to, our behaviours, and our emotional reactions to things. All of those are things that almost every adult with ADHD will recognise as having issues with all of them, really. Mm-hmm. So the right half of the brain, in this prefrontal bit at the front, that controls something called behavioural inhibition, which, if you think about the words, it's the ability to inhibit your own behaviour. We've talked before about having a lack of brakes, the inability to stop or control some of our actions or thoughts. There might be movements or impulses or reactions.
You seem to have, an inability to stop being boring, don't you, to be honest?
Thanks, James. That was, you genuinely put your hand up and interrupted to say, stop being boring. This is literally our job. I'm ignoring you. Anyway, in order for the prefrontal cortex to work properly, even in a normal-sized prefrontal cortex, you need the right levels of neurotransmitters, brain chemicals, James. That's what you need to hear. Everyone knows I'm talking especially about dopamine and noradrenaline. Dopamine gets all the press, but it's not the only brain chemical involved in ADHD, as we say a lot. As you've probably guessed, almost all of you, in ADHD, not only is your prefrontal cortex likely to be smaller, but it also has less activity of the brain chemicals, which means it just doesn't work properly. That's the key here. Front bit doesn't work properly. So not being able to control the urge to do something or being impulsive to do something is partly due to this lack of size and adequate activity right in the prefrontal cortex. Other brain areas are available. Right. Last bit, promise. The prefrontal cortex will also have a role in being impulsive as it regulates the inhibition of things you might not want to do. Interestingly, a study about 3 years ago suggested that hyperactivity was associated with increased connectivity in other bits of the brain, some very oddly named and hard to pronounce bits of the brain found within the auditory, listening, and sensory motor network. the sensory motor network is activated during movement, what we call motor task movements, really, such as finger tapping. So if this part of the brain is more active and connected, it could explain why some of us with ADHD, in fact, most, probably around 70%, also have issues with hyperactivity or have hyperactivity as part of their ADHD. And that is why James can't let me finish.
So thanks for that. you've delivered that adequately, and it takes us nicely into the break, where we'll be back with some personal reflections on how massively hyperactive and impulsive we are. See you in a minute.
Welcome back to podcast number 29, James, of the ADHD Adults Podcast. We are talking about hyperactivity and impulsivity as part two of a two-part mini-series, just reminding everybody of the basics of ADHD. In the first bit, we banged on about the psychoeducation behind hyperactivity and impulsivity. As always, personal reflections on what are quite frankly ridiculous bits of evidence of hyperactivity in both of us. James, how's it been for you?
So I think this is interesting. Nobody else probably will. But last week, I think I said that I wasn't really aware of my inattentiveness before I got diagnosed. It wasn't really something that I thought about or knew or had noticed. Until you told me that I probably had ADHD, you bastard. But I was absolutely fully aware that I was hyperactive and impulsive. And if you go back to when I grew up back in the 1920s in a small Shropshire town called Clibbury Mortimer, where there were basically three GPs and that's it. And I can vividly remember being told when my mum took him there, I don't know what for actually, but being told he's hyperactive and he'll grow out of it. I can remember that. And obviously back then, you know, probably 1980s, to be honest, very early 80s, you know, ADHD wasn't a thing in small rural Shropshire towns. You wouldn't get diagnosed with it. So kids would be called hyperactive if they, you know, acted out or were hyperactive. But if you go through that list, the nine things, apart from the orange on a toothpick, then... It feels like someone's describing me. So fidget, tap my hands, feet, squirm in my seat, do that all the time. I cannot sit still. It's the second one about leaving your seat in a situation where remaining seated is expected. I can't take a phone call and sit down. Cannot do it. I have to get up and walk. And it doesn't matter where I am. It's somebody else's house, you know, on a train, in an office. I've got to get up and walk about. It's a weird thing, but that sitting down and having a conversation, the two things just don't go together. Weirdly, the only thing I can sit down for any extended amount of time is a film, but I think there's some kind of emotional reward there. Restlessness all the time. I'm never settled. The kind of inner peace, the sense of I'm relaxed lying on a beach, you know, or sunbathing or sitting having a picnic, can't do it. After 5 minutes, got to do something else. What can I do? There's got to be something to do. Difficulty engaging in quiet, leisurely activities. I don't even know what they are, to be honest. This was one of the ones that I deliberately didn't answer in my diagnostic interview because I was already bored. So I just put no problems for this.
Seems fine.
Yes, it came out as negative. The driven by a motor thing, holy fuck, that is... absolutely me to a T, that I just have to be, I have to be doing something. I have to keep going. I have to keep going. I've got to have a task. I've got to be doing something. If I try and stop, then that domestic anxiety we've talked about, the second my brain or me says, that's it for the day, within 5 minutes, massive domestic anxiety, which you'll remember I said I'd fixed about 3 months.
Yeah, you'd fix that, didn't you? Can you remind everyone how you fixed it?
Was that drinking, Al?
You started drinking.
I started drinking brandy. Expensive brandy. But the second I say to myself, I finished work. Let's just have some downtime because I deserve it. Massive domestic anxiety. Can't move, walk, leave the house unless I get drunk or something else. Talk excessively.
I mean, you're doing it right now. I'm bored out of my mind.
I know that's true. And I think most of our listeners will probably agree that's a bigger problem for you than me. Talk excessively, I'm maybe not positive for. I can't remember if I was. Blurt out answers. Oh, fucking hell. This is one of the things that I even now still struggle with, stuff from years ago where I've done that.
Oh, yeah.
And it haunts me.
Three in the morning. James, yeah, exactly. Do you remember when you ruined everything?
Yeah, exactly. Particularly when it's literally nothing to do with you and you're answering it for somebody else, or you're answering somebody else's question in a kind of a quiz type situation.
Oh, God.
Into all the time. difficulty waiting their turn, and particularly in conversations. You know, you've got a tip for this, which I'm sure you'll give later, but this again for me was something that I would give myself shit for ages, because it's embarrassing. I would see two people having a conversation and walk up because I wanted to speak to one of them, wait for 10 seconds, they're deep in conversation, and then just blurt out, "Oh, John, I need to speak to you about something." And then they obviously look at you aghast because you're this mutant that's just not respected the fact they're in a conversation. And then obviously I'd walk away thinking, "Oh, I never did that. I'm such a dick."
Again.
But that's every day. It would be all the time. And then the last one, interrupting or intruding, it's obviously related to number 8. Again, it's, absolutely unable to not do that and absolutely hate myself for it. So I think I always associated myself throughout my life with hyperactive and impulsive symptoms, but didn't know it was a thing. Because I didn't know that ADHD existed until you phoned me up, but it was 7 or 8 years ago. So this just feels like me much more than an attentiveness does, even though I now know I am inattentive. I've always known I'm hyperactive and massively impulsive. What about you, Alice?
Yeah, same, James. Looking at that list, it's just the same. Well, I didn't think I was hyperactive as a child. And partly because my brother was so much worse. I won't mention his name, Jules. But also, because I didn't have anything to compare it to. I now know that other people aren't behaving like I'm behaving, and they're not thinking the way I didn't, obviously didn't know that, you know? That is a list of 9 things that my life is like every single day, all day. Some of them have always been just annoying and even funny. You know, I don't mind. Others make me feel like a complete dick. Not being able to sit still when I'm supposed to, like at the theatre, talking so much in work and social situations. Even though just before I went into the room of the meeting or in the party, I begged myself not to overtalk and overshare. And then I did. Shared everything. Oh, and the shame and the guilt. The one I really hate, similar to you, I think, James, is the feeling of restlessness all the time. It's a fake feeling as well, because I haven't got anything else to do. It's like, you're doing the wrong thing. Do something else and make it movie, you know, make it something with Rod. It's a fake feeling that I should be doing something else.
Yeah.
They used to say about Al Capone that his tummy was never full. And they used to say that about me as well. What I'm trying to say, James, I'm exactly like Al Capone. I'm slightly overweight and I haven't paid my taxes. That's the only two. And my tummy's never full. And it's that, really, that restlessness, that tummy never full, needing to do something else. That was the cause of, well, drinking, frankly, and lots of other stuff as well.
And you get why people do use substances.
Absolutely.
Other ways of just getting through the day, because that for me, they're very closely linked. The restlessness and the being driven by a motor, just that sense that you've got to be doing something. You cannot all rest. It's awful, particularly if you've been working really hard and you get a holiday, and you go on holiday and you get there and within 5 minutes you can't fucking relax. You can't sit down or sunbathe or whatever. You've got to be, in your case, going and looking at churches or something really dull, but. It's
5 or 6 churches and I'm tired. No, I'm the same. I'm lying on the beach and I lie there. I go, "Oh, thank God for that. I can feel one little bit of sand on my leg and that's all I can think about. And I have to wiggle it and then my toe isn't right or the blanket over my eye is wrong. And then everything's wrong. Everything's wrong. Do something else. All the fucking time." Excuse my French.
I love how you apologize for swearing on one of the sweariest podcasts on mental health. That exists, even if it is 3,500.
Manners don't cost anything, James.
They don't, equally. Lots of things you can get for free, Alex. Some of them are quite fun. I noticed you said theatre and not cinema, which obviously is a bit of a tell. for you, isn't it? And you also haven't responded to me calling you Alice 3 times now, and that is irritating me.
I just thought your lisp had come back.
That's lispist, Alex, I'll have you know.
Probably is.
It is. Right, now it's time for the game that probably not actually, which is what has James lost, mislaid, or forgotten this week? So, you know, as we've talked about in the past, I know you hate this, even though you do secretly love me. You know, I know you don't like me smoking, but as we've talked about in the past, the only time I get in a piece, the only time that restlessness goes, and it's for about 5 minutes, is when I go outside with a fag and a cuppa and listen to music.
Today's episode is brought to you by Big Cigarette.
Big Cigarette's music and Tetley's tea. Now, it's quite a complicated procedure when you think about it, because I've got to remember the cigarettes, a lighter, the cup of tea, which everyone knows for me is a fucking problem, my phone, because that's where the music comes from, and my AirPods. So what was that, 6 things? I've got to remember. So the question is, this week, on one occasion when I went out for a cup of tea and a fag to listen to music to get some inner peace because I was having a very, very long and hard day, how many times did it take me to actually go outside and then come back inside, then go outside, then come back inside before I could do that? Was it number one, 4 times, number two, 6 times, or number three, 8 times?
Right. Let's have a... Was Sam with you?
No, was she at home or was she having a fag with me?
Well, you can't count up to 8, so she would have had to let you know. It can't be that.
So we're still going with the technique.
Yeah, we're doing that strategy. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I think that 4 times is probably average for you because of, you know, your difficulties. So I'm going to go slap bang in the middle and say 6.
And you're incorrect. It was 4. It was 4. I deliberately went low because I dislike you that much. I don't want you to score points. So it was a bit of diversion there. But yes, so we've now got, I think we agreed, is it 10 out of 20 now? Is it 10 out of 20? Did we even agree you had 10? I don't fucking know. If anybody knows the score.
50%.
Please can you
let us know? That's a pass in med school, James. Medical school.
The fact that you work in a medical school should give people no confidence in the medical system whatsoever, because you're teaching the people that are going to probably end up devastating their lives later on in hospitals. Fab, so you're still rubbish at this game. We can move on to the final part of the podcast now, which is top tips in a bit.
Bye.
Welcome back to the third and final part of episode 29 of the ADHD Adults podcast. I'm going to let you go first, Al, because the last few podcasts I've actually done well, and I know it diminishes you as a person to go second and just have to agree with everything I say. So out of pure generosity and benevolence, why don't you give us some tips, you big cock?
Welcome back to the episode 20. Oh, have you already? I wasn't listening. Right, so main tip, and you know what we're going to say, James and I are both going to say emotional acceptance, because it's a disorder and it's a smaller brain giving you a lack of behavioral inhibition. It isn't you being a naughty fidgety person. It doesn't work like that. So obviously emotional acceptance every week. But my best tips for this that are practical, the main one is, if you've got to be doing something and sitting down, sitting still, like going to the theatre, is to sit at the back by the door, and I will leave if I have to. That's hard, and it became easier because, and the reason it became easier for me is because I would explain to the people I'm with why I have to do that. I used to get so embarrassed, and people would either laugh at me or get annoyed with me, like I didn't care about their thing, or I was just being rude. I would explain that this is a physical restlessness as a symptom of a brain issue. It wasn't that I didn't like that particular aria or sports event or whatever.
I was going to try and get something in about it, but it depends on the aria, because that's the only thing I know about opera, but you beat me to it, you fucker.
I've never left an opera, obviously, but I have left everything else. The practical tip I have for blurting out or oversharing, my main strategy, honestly, I'm not sure this is a tip, but what I do is I'm a goddamn open book. I use the fact that everyone knows everything about me as power, because ain't no one going to blackmail me, because I tell everyone anyway immediately. But if it's something that I really don't want to share, maybe it affects other people or I just really don't want to, what I do is I try and say to myself before I use, think of what is the emotional effect it will have on either me or the people around me if I don't restrict that. And it usually helps me. It works about half the time, is what I'm trying to say. But I'm a massive oversharer. What about you, Jim? I'm trying.
Oh, you're done. I used to be called Jim, actually. I think we've chatted about this. When I started in academia, I had such imposter syndrome. I changed my name to James because I thought it sounded cleverer. It didn't work, obviously.
I mean, it does.
Does it?
I think, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough, mate. Right. One of my tips, a lot of this comes down to whether or not you're willing to share your diagnosis or your symptoms if you're undiagnosed. Because remember, we are here for all those who are undiagnosed, particularly those who are on massively long fucking waiting lists trying to get diagnosed. But if you're willing to share your diagnosis or your symptoms, then you can kind of get ahead of the game. And Alex, I now understand why Alex doesn't like going second, because I feel like I'm just repeating something that a complete dickhead said.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't sit still in a meeting, like I can't back when we used to have face-to-face meetings, if those present know about your ADHD or your symptoms, then you can get up and walk around without people thinking, what's he doing? Or, you know, where's she going? It actually gives you a little bit of power there, because people will just think, that's Alex. He's got ADHD. He's hyperactive. If you tend to interrupt people, or blurt things out, or you can't wait for your turn in a conversation. And I expected, and I've written this down, I expected Alex to talk about his pad and paper. But again, people will understand if they know that you have ADHD or you have ADHD symptoms. They're more likely to be accepting and not think you're just a cock. They'll probably, you know, nobody likes being interrupted, but people do generally understand if they realize you don't have control over that interrupting. Now, if you don't disclose your diagnosis or symptoms, which is absolutely fine, we're not the disclosure ADHD police, then Alex has already mentioned emotional acceptance, which is really important, and that is forgiving yourself for all of the stuff we've just talked about. So if you do interrupt someone, it's not your fault. Don't beat yourself up. We talked about totemming and, you know, having a mantra and saying, it's not me, it's my ADHD, or just something to take you out of the moment after something like that happens, so that you don't beat yourself up about it. If you can't stop it, at least don't fucking kill yourself for doing it. So emotional acceptance is massively important. For some, fidget toys help. Now, I genuinely didn't think a fidget ring was something that I needed. And a friend of mine who I used to work with now, Eric, bought a fidget ring, and it was great for him. And I thought, I'll buy one, and just didn't really work. But then I realized I already do it. I've got two rings on this finger and I constantly turn them around.
Yeah,
and
me too.
If I ever take my rings off, I'm like, I can't. I genuinely get more hyperactive. So it kind of works for me to have this little thing to focus on. So there's a bit of movement, bit of motor activity. I'm moving my fingers, and that kind of quells the need sometimes to get up or move around. And there are lots of different fidget toys, fidget rings. They may work for you, they may not. There's not a lot of evidence about them. And for impulsiveness, which is obviously part, we talk a lot about hyperactivity, but for impulsiveness, really it's about, and this doesn't work for every situation, but it's about kind of stop, think, act. And that's putting a pause in between the impulse to do something and doing it. So if you're about to send a really angry email or text message, you know, write it down, but don't send it.
Because that works for me, actually.
If you come back and look at it again in half an hour, you'll probably think, okay, that's a bit, I need to tone that down a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Equally, if you're about to make an impulse purchase, and there are lots of, we talked about this, and I think we did an impulse spending episode, didn't we? You know, you can always say, you know what, I'll try to say, right, I'll buy that tomorrow. I'll save it in my wish list and look at it tomorrow, and you'll probably even forget it exists. But stopping and putting a pause in before you act, when you can. Now, face-to-face, this often doesn't work, because I don't punch Alex in the face when I see him, really, I don't. That's down to impulse control that I don't think I have. So face-to-face, stop, think, act doesn't often work. But actually, you know, over the internet or your phone, email communication, it genuinely can help you from being impulsive.
It's why I only hang out with you when you're medicated. Neither of us, James, has said the tip for impulsivity that you just reminded me of, that we both do, which is when we've got an email to send that's emotionally difficult, or we're worried it'll piss someone off, we both send it to each other, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
And say, is that all right? And yeah. The problem is that you haven't got, you're quite much more aggressive than me. So you sometimes say, oh, that's brilliant, send it. And I think I shouldn't.
And I have terrible grammar and spelling. So obviously when I send you, comes back properly grammatically written, then I feel like the failure in life that I am. ADHD buddying is having a buddy. It's just so important for things like this. Just having somebody.
Even if you don't like them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in this case, case in point, Alex, it's just so useful because it's that little sounding board that means you can just check if something is stupid, if you should send something. And it works for loads of other things. If you've got paralysis, if you're struggling with your mental health, having somebody that understands, having a buddy with ADHD or somebody with lived experience of ADHD, so important to have them there.
Absolutely.
Right, we're nearly done, aren't we? Thank fuck.
Yeah, too long.
Product recommendation of the week then, fidget ring, I suppose. That'll do.
Yeah. Won't it? Or a Dutch totem. I don't know what that means.
It's got to be something though, hasn't it?
Definitely.
Right. On that note, that was episode 29 of the ADHD Adults. Sit Still and Interrupt, which was the second part of a two-part series where we got back to basics to talk about inattentiveness and hyperactivity / impulsivity or impulsiveness, which Alex doesn't think is a real word.
Not a word.
Word. So, as usual, if you want to get in touch, largely to criticize Alex or tell us how bad our podcast is, then you can get in touch on the socials at ADHD Adult UK. I'd just like to say, and this is quite important, if you have emailed us, even semi-recently, I've lost all my emails, as in I've forgotten what they are. And I think I've probably got a few emails from people through the website, etc. So apologies for that. And equally, as we talked about in one of the games of What's James Lost, if you've sent us a WhatsApp message, I've lost the phone, which has the WhatsApp account on it. So I'm not ignoring you, or we're not ignoring you. We're just not very good. So if you get in touch, the best way really is through the social media accounts, because we've lost the ability probably to access anything else. Well, I am going to try and work out the emails, and apologies for that. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you soon.
Word. Bye, all.